Welcome to Amazon Legends, where we have real stories about making it big on Amazon. Our guests are CEOs of large companies and entrepreneurs who became power sellers. Also providers specializing in helping sellers, aggregators that acquire sellers, and former Amazonians will give us an insight from behind the scenes. Here is your host, Nick Urison.
Welcome to another episode of Amazon Legends. My next guest today has managed the e-commerce operations, the global consumer products company, over 6 years. And he then spent 2 years at the world's largest aggregator, Thrasio. And that's a school. I mean, you learn everything. And you learn, by the way, in Thrasio, people learned, I don't think by design, it just happened that way, not only the work itself, but also how to cope with such explosive growth, new people joining all the time, new customers, new clients, of course, new managers, new hierarchies. And by the way, COVID in the meantime, I mean, it must have been a madhouse. So this guy spent 2 years doing this. And he's today the data solutions manager at Podium, which is a marketplace marketing agency. He was brought in especially to work on data. So I'm dying to have a conversation with him. And when he's not working, he's no surprise, loves anything to do with mountain bikes and skiing because he lives in Utah. So
thanks so much, Nick.
Everybody, meet my guest, Cameron Harper. Welcome to the show, Cameron.
Thank you so much, Nick. It's so good to be here, and I'm excited to share some of the things I think about on a daily basis with everybody.
You know, this high growth environment, I mean, I've been lucky enough or unlucky enough to be part of something like that, where we also grew from zero to 200 people in 1 year. And it was crazy. I was interviewing people until about 40, 45 people, one by one. I interviewed everybody. And then after that, just forget it. No way.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, I couldn't. So in the meantime, you know, team, clients, and blah, blah. So, okay. So since you are the data guy, and data solutions expert brought in for data operations, we're going to dig into data today. And what I want, the question that I get from, if not all, most sellers, at least those who know the answers are always also looking for different perspectives, is, okay, we know that doing business on Amazon is always about data, but what data point am I looking at, and you know, what is the way to do this? You know, what do you do with it? So
yeah, absolutely.
So that's what we're gonna dig into today. And if we want to title it, it's about data-driven decision making.
So yeah, absolutely.
We're gonna learn all about data-driven decision making, and Cameron is gonna walk us through. So where do we start, Cameron? Walk us through the methodology.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think, you know, I'm somebody who always tries to distill something down to as simple as you can get it and then build things up over time. So really, I think on Amazon or any other e-commerce site or D2C, it starts with kind of like three questions. Like, you know, what are the data points? Where can you find them? And then once you have them, what do you do with them? I think, you know, everybody's afraid of sitting on just a mountain of data and you get lost in it, not really knowing what to do with it. So I think the secret sauce for a lot of organizations and a lot of people is that ability to take a data point and turn it into something that's actionable, that moves a needle.
Okay, so you just said the magic word. You turn the data into something actionable. In other words, you're not, when you say actionable, my most favorite example is if you can imagine the cockpit of a plane, so many numbers, so many dials and needles, and there is the captain sits behind the yoke, and there is no way that that guy is seeing everything that matters, right? So he's looking at a few things. First of all, what are those few things that he's looking at? And the off chance that he's not looking at something that matters, there is voice control. Like if it goes down too low, then computer kicks in, says, pull up, right? So at that point, there is no more looking at the altitude. Instead, he's just hearing pull up. So what you are saying is you're going to take the data and put it into a form where that whatever it is that you've done, the work will simply tell you to do certain things.
Absolutely. It's funny you use that analogy too. That's we used to always talk about something like a race car. And I was a part of a team who helped, as I called it, operationalize certain pieces of our data. In my case, I was always focused on the product catalog or some of our ad campaigns, which, again, thinking about data points is kind of the lowest level data point you can attach almost everything you do in a business from a day-to-day standpoint down to it. But as you mentioned, you know, that brand manager or that account manager who's managing an account is sitting there and there's so many lights that can be flashing. And our job on a data and analytics team is to really help them decide what's the right dashboard, quite literally a dashboard like you'd have in an airplane or on a race car, and choose the dials that tell you and alert you, which is another key piece of kind of like where do you get alerts or where do, you know, managers need to be alerted about things and what mechanisms can you put in place to kind of flash that warning light for a brand manager or an account manager that like your airplane is about to crash. You need to pull up or you need to, you know, slow down spend because you're out of stock on a product. It's incredible how often you'll see, you know, brands and companies out there spending tons and tons of money for weeks after a product has been out of stock. So not all ads are retail aware is a good example of sometime when you need a dashboard to tell you, hey, this thing's out of stock, maybe slow down, spend a little bit.
Yeah. Great. So this is going to be a great conversation because we're going to be specific and my listeners will be able to walk away with something they can apply right away. Okay. Let's jump right into this. Where do we start? What are the data points that we are looking at?
Yeah, absolutely. I think really for anybody, especially on Amazon, it starts right at Seller Central. A lot of the information that you need in order to manage your brand, or quite literally all the information you need to manage it at a kind of basic level, is there within Seller Central. It's kind of, you know, tucked away between the business reports, inventory reports, looking at some of your financial reports. And then if, you know, you have brand ownership, you've got brand analytics where you can tell, you know, kind of a marketplace scope of things as well. But really it all starts within Seller Central or Vendor Central if you have a, you know, very large account.
Yeah. So that's the answer to the where we find it. Of course, I mean, it's going to be there, but I want to get specific to the actual data points and then let's point everybody to where they can find that data. And more important, what is the time frame to look at for that data? Because that's the biggest thing, right? So it keeps moving. It's not static. So it's always going to be moving. So let's tell everybody, what are we looking at, during what time frame, and where do we find that data?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think really you can find, again, all the information you need either directly within Seller Central, if you're, I'm going to say, lucky enough to manage a single brand, but as things scale, hopefully you've got a team or, you know, a tool where you can start plugging into APIs and pulling some of that historical data, things like sales and traffic, you can pull for up to 2 years and it's kind of a rolling clock. So the second you get access to Seller Central or a brand or a product that's been selling, you know, in your back pocket that you have 2 years worth of data that you can immediately start pulling to help you do things like inventory forecasting for an upcoming tentpole event like Fall Prime or Turkey Five. But the biggest place, yeah, is right there within Seller Central. And if you're somebody who's looking at trying to get into Amazon and you don't have access to Seller Central, there are some really great tools like Helium 10 or Jungle Scout or even DataHawk that will allow you to kind of, see what is out there on Amazon and get a competitive view of what your competitors are doing, in order to understand, okay, this might actually be a vertical or a place where I can insert my product on Amazon and hopefully see some level of su success.
Yeah. So tell us what are the numbers that you're watching?
Yeah. Sales, traffic, views, as an e-commerce manager would boil things down to three metrics. You have your traffic, you have your average order value, and you have your conversion rate. And that is as simple as I ever found. I can kind of distill things down and be able to project what my sales or, kind of what my business is going to look like online. Very similar to if you own a brick and mortar store. It's like, how many people come in? How many of the people that come in purchase something? And when they purchase something, how much do they spend? And everything else starts to kind of like waterfall off of those three stats as a tactic to increase or decrease. You can try to do upsell at the point of purchase to get people to, take your average order value up, and that will increase your top line revenue and so forth. So, again, really distilling it down to the very basic traffic. And when I say traffic, I mean like down to the product listing. So sales and traffic, that's something just readily available within Amazon Seller Central. And then if you are spending money on media or PPC, going in the ad console and getting an understanding of, what sort of organic traffic you have versus paid traffic, and being able to understand, okay, is my organic traffic growing or am I really only growing my paid traffic? So yeah, all the points are in there. They're pretty easy to find, and it's just a matter of pulling them out and bringing them together and being able to tell yourself, like, okay, where's the threshold where I want a warning light to be initiated, or like, how far in advance do I need to know about certain metrics in order to be able to ensure that I have inventory is a good example where you really need to know quite a ways ahead whether or not you're going to sell out or are out of stock on something so that you can minimize the amount of days that you're out of stock on an item.
Okay, so right there, you very in a very soft spoken way said, "Oh, it's three things. That's all I look at." But there's so much stuff that needs to be unpacked. First of all, traffic, average order value, and conversion rate, right? That's what you are watching. You ought to be looking at it at SKU level, right? So just looking at one big number doesn't really mean anything. So you need to be able to break it down to SKU, right? So for our listeners, so now suddenly the list starts to grow about things to do, right? So you need to be fetching your traffic and average order value and conversion rate per SKU. Are you doing that once a week, once a month? And when you do that, are you capturing that data on daily basis or for a time frame?
Yeah, it's
How
a
does
great
that just,
question.
yeah, you want to look at it over time, right? Because just looking at it once is like looking out the windows, oh, it's raining, and then you walk out 2 hours later, there's no rain, no nothing. In fact, it's boiling hot.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And yeah, I would say the standard really is looking at a daily level. Amazon keeps improving its APIs and its data streams over time so that, certain data points become available to you hourly. Obviously, you can usually jump in Seller Central as long as there's not big data lags and see on an hourly basis if you need that. But I would say, there's so much going on Amazon. There are so many different places where you can find data that really, like, you've got to try to always simplify things down. And I think really pulling data at the daily level and then doing kind of your weekly and monthly trends over time is enough to really see quite a bit of success on Amazon.
Okay. So now we have another challenge. First of all, you have to go to Seller Central and fetch the reports daily, right? The second thing is, once you fetch those reports, you have to put them together with the rest of the data. Now it suddenly starts to grow. So this suddenly becomes something that is more than an Excel or Google Sheets operation can handle, right?
Absolutely, especially as you scale across multiple brands, or if your product catalog starts to get really, really large, you increase variations, or you just start bringing on new products. It gets big fast. So that's where typically you'll find a warehouse software or something like a Snowflake, where you can start storing and setting up schedulers and scripts with, you know, Python or other kind of like ETL tools to be able to extract data from Amazon's seller API, their SP API, pull that data down into a repository. And then from there, again, this is kind of the spot where I feel like a lot of people get. They're like, okay, I know the data points that I need, and I know where to go get them, so I'm going to go get them. And then all of a sudden you're sitting on a mountain of data, and then you get to that last step of, okay, now what do I do with this? Where do I start to visualize and contextualize all of this data that's sitting in a warehouse? And there's a lot of different ways you can do that. Again, you made a great point. Excel or Google Sheets are a place where I think you can start really, really small and scale over time. But how you're able to extrapolate insights and actions out of the data is really where that secret sauce lies. And then in an agency like at Padean or an aggregator like Thrasio, where you have hundreds of brands and hundreds of thousands of products, you need to figure out how you can manage a small subset of SKUs as if that is your sole purpose in life, to just manage these things. And then you build mechanisms in order to help you be able to structure and scale things across hundreds of brands or hundreds of clients and hundreds of thousands or millions of products.
Yeah. So you said something else also. It's another concept that has to be part of the consideration. That is, visualize the data. In other words, you don't want to be looking at rows and rows and rows and rows of numbers. It's not going to tell you anything. You can't spot trends. You need to put a picture
Absolutely.
To the numbers and look at the picture. So now what you are saying then is, you need to fetch the data on daily basis, every day.
Yep.
And you need to store it so that you have cumulative data starting from Absolutely. Whenever you started to do this.
Yep.
And then you have to visualize it. So these are the, as you would say, prerequisites to do anything meaningful. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's anybody who's in business is either doing just that or doing some form of that, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you have to, otherwise you're just looking at an isolated incident. Okay. So now we've gotten our traffic, average order value, and conversion rates. What is there is a single source where you can pick this up from. So tell our listeners where they can pick up this data.
Yeah, so you can pick it up right within Seller Central, within the business reports. You can, you know, download a certain date range of sales and traffic within the SP API. There's a ton of documentation that'll point you exactly where to go. Luckily, Amazon does a really good job at updating. They also have, you know, a notifications API where you can see what's changing with their API and get regular, again, what's a data point? You know, I can find the data, but then what do I do with it? Well, you can set alerts for yourself to know when things are changing with the API. And as Amazon announces those things, you can keep track of it.
The one that I use for this exact piece of information is, the when you go to business reports, I usually use the detail page, sales and traffic at child SKU, child ASIN level.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that one will give you everything per child ASIN, which is what you want at the end of the day. So
exactly. Yeah, it's helpful to see things at the parent level. But to your point, when you know the child ASIN really is the foundation of everything that happens on Amazon, because that is, you know, what your inventory number gets attached to as well, which is a very, very crucial kind of like metric within that triad of kind of, you know, how is my business doing with average order value, conversion rate, and sessions. You'll still have those three metrics, but if you have no inventory, they'll all be zero. Well, your traffic might not be zero, but your conversion rate and average order value will be zero. So inventory is one of those kind of like devil in the detail things where you've really got to find ways to extrapolate how much inventory you have, what the velocity is, your sell through, so that you can make sure you're always in stock. Because Amazon, as a marketplace, really puts a lot of emphasis on is the product in stock, and going out of stock can severely hurt your organic rank, and then you're stuck trying to play catch up by typically increasing your marketing budget afterwards to try and get you back to a good organic rank.
Well, I mean, once you run out of stock, it becomes downhill because your historical averages start to drop, and those will take you down in terms of rank. Okay, so now we've done everything and we've got our data. What are we watching exactly? What are some things that will be a cause for concern or you will want to be aware of? Like when you're driving your car, if your gas is below half a tank and you're about to go on a long journey, and or you are running in reserve and there are no gas stations around and things like that. So tell us, what are we watching? And also put in that same context, what do we do?
Yeah, absolutely. Another great metric that you can pull right out of Seller Central or right out of the API is your buy box percentage. That can be a really good indicator of, hey, is everything going smooth on my listing, or is something coming in and interrupting my ability to sell a product on Amazon? Because a number of different things can affect your buy box percentage. It could be inventory. It could be a third party seller trying to come in and also sell your product, and they come in at a lower price to start to win buy box. So buy box is one of those metrics specifically on Amazon, but really on any marketplace where you can see, okay, for this product where, you know, depending on your relationship with your brand or if you own the brand, you can see pretty easily like, hey, are there people who have, you know, stepped outside of their contract in selling on Amazon and selling below a MAP price that we agreed upon, and so forth. So buy box is pretty crucial. And like I said, there's a number of reasons that could cause it to go down. So being able to see that buy box over time can help you isolate or annotate your data to be able to know when something happened that caused your listing or your velocity to go down.
I have a question for my listeners. Are you experiencing cash flow challenges with your Amazon business? Well, silly question. Who is not, right? So let me introduce you to Viably, a unique solution tailored for Amazon sellers and e-commerce enterprises. By connecting your Seller Central or Shopify account, you can promptly access funding along with a variety of financial tools, all for a flat fee. It's as simple as that. And for my listeners, they are offering an extra $1,500 in funding for eligible applications. Start your quick and easy application today at runviably.com/legends. And that's runviably.com/legends. Well, talk about buy box. I'm glad you bring it up because this is a favorite metric of mine. You know why?
Yeah.
Because I tell people that, okay, you want to stay in stock all the time. And what is one number that you are always working with in order to calculate how many pieces you are likely to sell is your historical daily sell-through rate, right?
Yep.
So what is your sales velocity? 12 pieces a day, 24 pieces a day, whatever. And where are you getting that data? You're looking at your historical sales, right? You say, okay, I sold 10 pieces yesterday and 18 pieces the day before, whatever. And then you take an average and say, okay, or weekly total, monthly total. You look at all those things. And of course, the greater the time frame, the more accurate you tend to be. And then you factor in some extras for fluctuations and blah, blah.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? I tell people, if you have legitimate resellers that you know who they are and they are all behaving themselves, they're not like race to the bottom, but they are sharing the buy box with you. This is even more important because your sell-through rate is useless if you don't know your buy box retention rate, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what I always do is, we've got a SaaS platform of our own, and we track this on daily basis. So I say, look, go here, and then for each month, or you select the time frame, whatever, and then you export the buy box retention rate. And then you take that exported data and blend it into your daily sell-through rates. There you go. You have your 100% market share. And then from that, you can decide, okay, I share the buy box 70%, me 30%, other resellers. Now you know how many pieces you should have in stock. So that's how I use the buy box retention rate.
Yeah, it's a great call out. It's, depending on your situation, you may be dealing with, you know, resellers or not, but it is a stat. Even if you don't have any resellers, like, it's something you should be looking at, because there are times where, you know, I've seen when you have a distributor within your, you know, distribution network, you'd be surprised how often products kind of like trickle in, or third-party sellers trickle in on Amazon. So that buy box percentage can be a very crucial, like we said, very simple, but a good warning light to show you when something might be going awry with one of your listings.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing that's happening more and more of these days is Amazon is, believe it or not, is the fastest growing B2B marketplace through Amazon Business Program. So Amazon is promoting Amazon Business, and in the process, they are giving out all these promotional offers for discounts. Nothing to do with the sellers, but Amazon gives that as a privilege to Amazon Business customers. So some of these real smart entrepreneurial people, they open a business account, and they do their research very carefully to find some of these private label products that are high in demand with good margin, and they buy them in large quantity using the Amazon Business Program.
Yeah, hopefully you're watching your business pretty closely so that you don't get caught off guard by some of those things, but those like black hat tactics are definitely out there.
Well, I mean, there is nothing wrong with this. Because you can then go list your offer as a reseller on the same ASIN, and you bought it legitimately on Amazon. Amazon is not going to fight you because it's their program. Yeah. So what is the end result? The end result is you lost the buy box. So this happens. So in order to plan your replenishment, this is another way for you to do. Okay, so let's now talk about what are we doing with those three metrics, that data points that we are tracking.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say that, you know, naturally the next step, if you're working within Excel or Google Sheets, like you're popping open pivot tables, you're visualizing, you're pulling in charts to be able to help you see kind of time series data, where you're looking at a metric over time and trying to say what's going on. If you're larger, or maybe a little bit more of an enterprise, or have more dollars in a larger team, then you're probably using a software like Power BI, Tableau, Looker, formerly Google Data Studio, and you're bringing in, at least this is, you know, this is what I used to do when I was at a global retailer managing their e-commerce business was, for me, I think my Amazon data journey started with, I worked for a French cutlery company, and we had a knife that sold extremely well, but only in the United States, and really sold well on Amazon. And one of the things we wanted to understand was the distribution of this product. As we sold it, you know, wholesale, we sold it to online wholesalers who, you know, accounts who had their own D2C websites where they'd sell things. And then we also sold it on Amazon. And I wanted to be able to tell myself, okay, where in the United States or in North America is this product going? And being able, you know, we had an FBA relationship with Amazon, and being able to see the zip code of orders and knowing what product was on an order, I could say, okay, on Amazon, here's where this product is going. And then I knew on my Shopify store, here's where that product was going on Shopify. And then I knew for my wholesalers who I would ship inventory to, I knew at least, you know, where they were located and where that product was going, so that I could pull, again, this was just kind of like me managing D2C. It wasn't where I am today, but it was, how can I pull this in and blend, again, bringing things down to the very base level that I could, which is that ASIN or the product SKU at the child level, and attaching all these data points to it to be able to help me understand and visualize where and how my product is being distributed across the continent, which I think for me was really that like first opportunity with Amazon and understanding, okay, as a brand, how can I make this this channel work for me instead of against me, and help me understand how my product's penetrating a market.
So yeah, I mean, that's a great way to see zip code by zip code, state by state. You can see where the product is going. So as far as Amazon is concerned, other than looking at those individual data points over time and then seeing ups and downs, well, let's first deal with the ups and downs. So, you know, it's never flat, right? So it's always moving Yep. up and down. So what is it that you are doing with that? And what kind of a fluctuation is a cause for concern?
Yeah, good question. So I think first and foremost, and something I should address on, like, from a visualization standpoint, and again, it's important to know that you can find all of these things and download them within Seller Central, but part of where visualizations and data warehouses become important is you're not thumbing through different tabs in Seller Central to try and pull an export here, an export there. You can pull all that into one place so that you can visualize it as one kind of like cohesive table, or you can look at that child ASIN and see everything attached to it, inventory, traffic, you know, marketing metrics. You can look at, you know, sponsored product campaigns and attach that to that product. So after you've got everything attached, really, again, I like to look at things on a weekly basis, knowing that just seeing over time as I make a decision, sometimes depending on the decision, it happens really fast, and then the cause and effect is really quick. So you want to be looking at things daily, but oftentimes making a decision on a weekly basis, I know that, okay, by next week, I'll be able to see if I saw a metric coming down in my time series data, I made a decision, then what happened a week or maybe 2 weeks from there, was I able to kind of right size that, that dip, or, you know, be able to understand. Oftentimes, you know, we only focus on what caused the product to go down, but I think it's just as important to understand, wow, sales really took off for this product. Go out there with your, you know, your virtual microphone and say, okay, what happened? Look at all the metrics and try to understand what caused something to spike, because that information sometimes can be even more valuable than, okay, what caused this thing to drop?
To all my listeners, how would you like to boost your Amazon sales by up to 600%? That means you must have a winning product detail page. Mindful Goods crafts product pages that pop. Their creative marketers ensure your products aren't just another face in the crowd, but they stand out and sell. From SEO-optimized copy to scroll-stopping visuals, they've got your back. And for a limited time, my listeners get $100 off a brand story service. Elevate your Amazon game with Mindful Goods. Visit www.mindfulgoods.co/legends now and enter the code Amazon Legends to receive your $100 off. How much of a variance is something that you want to pay closer attention to? Is it, you know, say you have an average order value of, I don't know, $38.
Yeah, so, it's a good question. There's a lot of factors that go into it. If it's, you know, a product that you know you've got third-party sellers, or you have discounting happening in retailers outside of Amazon or so forth. But usually it's just a couple of percentage points will be something where you're starting to take, you know, pay attention. And then as you start to see things creep into double digit decreases or increases, you're starting to ask yourself like, okay, like what's going on here? I need to dig in, because again, the dashboard will kind of tell you that there's a symptom, but you still, like a doctor, need to go in and be able to diagnose what is causing this symptom. And that symptom, you know, is 10, 15% sales decrease, or a buy box percentage dropping. A couple of percentage points on buy box, it can sometimes be enough to alert you. So it depends on the metric, but again, that's why it's important to have that history and be able to visualize over time.
That's why I want to get specific, because we can, as you know, there are so many data points to look at, but I want to really get honing on a few as thoroughly as possible so that people can say, okay, I know exactly how to make use of this. But I have something interesting also to ask you as another data point to track. So you pointed out buy box. Yeah. I will suggest to you that average order value does not really tell you the full story. You know what tells you the full story? Average order value in comparison to average item value.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, if an item costs $38 and your average order value is $51, what does that tell you?
Yeah, there's something else in the cart or something else going on.
No. Well, people are buying multiple pieces.
Yeah, true.
So really, if you tracked the difference between average order value and average item value, the greater the difference, the better you are performing. Because that means people are choosing to buy more quantity than just one piece at a time, right?
True. Yeah. There's also some, like, you know, simple metrics in there, like average selling price, ASP, which will tell you pretty quickly at that product level, like, you know, for each one of this item sold, what is the average price that it goes for? So if I'm trying to look at or have like receptors on if there's changes happening outside of what I have said, like I shouldn't be expecting my ASP to be dropping right now. So what's going on? That's just like another metric. Obviously, average order value is one thing. That's maybe a little bit more for like a D2C Shopify site, where a better metric for Amazon is like your average selling price of a product. So you can see that over time. And then if you want to do basket analysis, there's again some great exports that you can pull out of your brand analytics to do some market basket analysis to see, you know, customers who bought this product, what else was in their cart outside of just, did they buy two of these or three of these? Because obviously you own that thing, so you can see that number, but to see what else is being bought with it can be pretty cool too.
Yeah. I think the average selling price, that is across multiple items, right? Multiple different SKUs, right? That's what it will come down to at the end?
I don't believe so. I do believe it's down to the like individual child ASIN level. But one thing I will say you have to kind of watch out for is if you're selling that B2B and D2C, you could, you know, and you're aggregating that together from those two sales, that could kind of like throw a false flag in your ASP
Yeah, B2B needs to be looked at separately. Otherwise, it shows already your
It can
totals.
be helpful when you're looking at units, but yeah, for stuff like your sales price, it can definitely muddy the waters. So it's good to have that context or separate those things so that you don't get them confused or think that your product's going for wholesale.
So what do you do with it? Let's say that your average order value is going down. Yeah, what do you do with it?
Yeah, it's a good question. Typically, I'll go to the listing, see like what's going on with the listing, see if there are opportunities to do bundling, see kind of like if did anything change on the competitive kind of like landscape of my product, or is it, you know, something, let's say it's an air filter. So it's kind of like you bought the air purifier and we want you to maybe subscribe and save and get more filters. And we were selling them in a one pack. You know, is there an opportunity to sell them in a three pack or a four pack or a five pack, or finding ways or auxiliary products that are attached to maybe a hero product that you can kind of leverage some of that velocity of a hero product to bring up some of the auxiliary items, or look at virtual bundling as a way to kind of like help inflate your order value if it's going down, or change the A plus content. Let people know that, hey, like you're buying this lawn chair, buy one for yourself and your friend, or yourself and your wife or your husband or whatever. And then you're getting, you know, you're kind of priming that consumer for, oh yeah, I, you know, should maybe think about buying more than just one of these things, which will help bring that order value up.
So the drops in average order value will then lead to taking some additional actions to, well, when I say additional actions, taking external actions to look into bundling and enhancing some of your content to promote, you know, larger quantities and things like that. But definitely sounds like you need to think about creating packs, multiple pieces of the same item or bundles. So that way you can push the average order value up, right? That's what I'm hearing from you.
Exactly. And again, a lot like certain metrics can be, I go into medical because my wife's in medicine, where like that is showing you that you have a symptom, like, you know, my stomach hurts. Well, now you need to go diagnose what, there's a lot of different reasons why your stomach might hurt or why your listing might be, you know, dropping in sales velocity. So now you need to go and diagnose what is causing that. And then the part that I find really, really fun and where I focus the majority of my day is being able to visualize and understand, okay, we need the dashboard that'll tell us when something goes wrong. And then we need to quickly and easily be able to attach symptoms to like a diagnosis. So what are those reasons why that symptom could be occurring? And then from there, how do we shorten the distance from I'm staring at a dashboard and I see something has gone down on one of my listings. Now, where do I have to pivot or where do I have to go to right that wrong that is happening? And being able to shorten the distance or shorten the time between seeing something, saying something, and then actually doing something is where I like to spend my time noodling on how can we bring systems together or turn a passive dashboard that's telling you your engine's overheating into something that can maybe auto course correct a car or an engine or whatever it is to be able to keep you on the road and performing optimally as much and as often as possible.
Yeah. So average order value, I understand. Let's talk about the conversion rates. So conversion rates, again, you're doing the same thing, SKU by SKU per day, and then looking at it on a weekly basis. But you can see for each day how it was performing. So tell us about, by the way, on average order value, you say a small drop is enough to be concerned. So what is that drop that you would tolerate? And then you would start to investigate in a couple of percentage points.
Yeah, any drop, if I don't expect there to be a drop, if I know I'm decreasing price or promoting something, I would expect like the average sale price of something to come down. So that would be expected. But I'd maybe expect the unit velocity to increase because I'm dropping my price, right? So really any drop, I would say on average order value or average sale price is enough to alert me that, hey, something changed that I need to take a look at. And there's great tools like Keepa is an add-on you can add to Google Chrome that will show you historically what that product or like what the price is that owns the buy box. So knowing again where you can go to find the piece of data and then what you choose to do with it after that is kind of on you.
So let's talk about conversion.
Yeah.
Tell me your take on conversion. Conversion is the magic bullet, right? So it's
Yeah.
the cure to all problems, and key to a lot of dough in the banking. So that's how it
Yeah,
is. So
absolutely. Yeah,
what do you do with it?
so one thing I really love to hone in on conversion rate is if you kind of step back and look at Amazon as a marketplace, there are some mechanisms that you can see readily available as you navigate around the site that you can kind of find ways to make them work for you instead of against you. And if you're looking at the conversion rate of your listing, so you're looking at like, the home for that product, it's the product display page, and you can see your conversion rate going down. That can be for a whole host of different reasons. And one of the things that, I spent a lot of time at Thrasio on a marketing and creative team where we were constantly looking at listings, looking at MLPs, A/B testing things to see, okay, if we swap a MLP from this image without packaging to this image with packaging or with a person or not with a person, like does that increase the conversion rate or the click-through rate and then the conversion rate of a product? I still come back to when you're on Amazon and on a product display page, there is a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot of sponsored product ads. There's display ads, there's competitor products, all of this noise on the product display page. So one area specific to conversion rate, if you're seeing your conversion rate go down and you're maybe not entirely sure if it's like a competitive, a price, a buy box, somebody came in and hijacked a listing and changed your bullets or whatever it may be, if you're not sure, one thing hopefully you can control is your storefront. And an Amazon storefront can be a really, really great way to help improve the sales velocity of a product and allows you as the seller to be able to eliminate a lot of that noise that is currently on a listing because on your storefront, you don't have a ton of competitor products. It's not like an advertising canvas, if you will, for your competitors to say, hey, we want to be able to try and kind of like capture some of the traffic that's going to your listing. You can really hone in and curate a storefront to a specific product to be able to highlight the features and benefits and hopefully get somebody to convert. And Amazon's really made a lot of nice strides in their storefront space to be able to give you some of those metrics like conversion rate on a storefront that, years ago we didn't really have, but you did have that on a product display page. So now you can also start to see your conversions on your products on your storefront and use that as a mechanism to try to help you push through when you maybe can't diagnose a conversion rate issue on your listing.
So, I mean, in all fairness, how much of the business a seller generates comes from the storefront page? Because a lot of people are running PPC ads, driving external traffic or whatever, and they're driving it all direct to the public product detail page.
Yeah.
So it's all about like looking at taking your listing live. And 2 days later, you're looking at your performance, say, oh, this is what I'm doing. Well, it's only 2 days of data. So if you look at your storefront performance, it's going to be limited amount of data
Yep.
because most of the business comes from. So is that how heavily do you utilize that data?
Yeah, great question. It definitely depends on I don't want to say necessarily the brand manager, the account manager or the brand, but it's a there's definitely a holistic strategy, I think, that goes into seeing storefronts truly be able to like see their day and get you a lot of sales. Sponsored brand ads can point directly to a storefront, as we know, a lot of people, a lot of sellers out there are driving external traffic directly to a listing. You can drive external traffic directly to a storefront page as well. So as the mechanisms on storefronts, I think, get better, I think we'll probably naturally start to see more and more people try to leverage storefronts. I would say that storefronts are also somewhere that the Amazon, if you look at Walmart.com or Target.com and look at, okay, I'm a brand and I'm trying to merchandise my set of products in this vertical where there's hundreds of thousands of products. Typically, their brand page is simply just the search query of the brand and they present you with a wall of products. So in this case, I would say Amazon's definitely got an upper hand right now in the storefront space. And I've naturally over the last few years started to see storefronts become more of like an active piece to a PPC strategy or a product strategy as you go to market and try to get sales velocity, but have a hard time penetrating on just the specific search terms you might be going after.
Cameron, one thing that I'm seeing more and more of is people link to their storefront from the brand story. And what they do is they create that brand, their storefront page with focus on upselling specific items that are the most likely purchases from their, whatever their main listing item is. So
Yep, for
what
sure.
you have is you have a listing that's performing well, doing well in terms of conversion, receiving reasonable amount of traffic and blah blah. And then right there on that particular listings page, you have a brand story that says click here to do whatever. And then that takes you to the storefront. And right there on the storefront is the perfect upsell to that main item. And
Yep.
of course, you can also offer some discounts or whatever. And right there, you have a way to increase your average order value, right? So that's
Yep.
more sales. And at the same time, you have no competition there. It's your storefront,
Yeah,
no other
absolutely.
storefront.
I think that last bit is really kind of the key with storefronts is you're able to still present your product in a very beautiful way if you're a brand or a seller. But you get to eliminate some of the noise that naturally exists on a product detail page, which is pretty clutch.
So we really ought to bring you back because we just started really, scraping the surface
Yeah,
here.
absolutely.
So we'll before we wrap up the business talk on the conversion rate, unlike your average order value, conversion rate will go up and down, right? So it's always fluctuating.
Sure.
What kind of a fluctuation is something that says to you, I need to look into things.
Yeah, I would say anything above or below a half percentage point to a single, like an actual percentage point
Really?
is can be enough to flag it. Again, it depends so much on how much noise, or not necessarily noise, but how many other parties are listing that product. But I will say, like, take that with a grain of salt, because if you're managing a really, really large catalog and you've got alerts attached to 1 or 2 percentage point drop on conversion rate, you're probably going to be just like peppered with alerts coming out of your data. But yeah, for larger catalogs or things where you know there's a lot of kind of like turmoil going on, it's tough to say exactly like, hey, this percentage point is where we set the alert. Because it definitely does depend kind of on like what the baseline is for a brand or for a product. But anywhere from 5 to 10% increase or decrease is notable in my book. And worth taking a look at.
And what is the drop calculated on? Is it? It's not daily, of course, right? So you are.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you are capturing the data daily, and then you're looking at the weekly.
Yeah.
Average,
so it'd be
and then that weekly average drops, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say weekly average drop is where, again, knowing when you see something saying, hey, warning, how long does it take to diagnose and truly make a change? Obviously, it's a continuous march to shorten the amount of time it takes to diagnose a symptom and then act upon it and fix things. But I would say that generally speaking, weekly is typically fast enough, with maybe the exception of some tentpole events like Prime Day or Turkey Five, where you're like, I've got to be on things by an intraday cadence instead of a weekly cadence, which typically, you know, is okay for the majority of the year.
Okay. So what you want to do is, what that means, practical terms, is you want to know your weekly average for each SKU, what your conversion rate is, and if this week's weekly average is you said 5% below?
Yeah, like 5 to 10%. Again, it depends on brand and kind of or product and what the baseline is. But I would say anytime a product drops its conversion rate by 10%, that's something that you definitely want to know about and understand.
So that's, just to clarify, 10% of your conversion rate or 10% drop in the conversion rate?
I'd say 10% of the conversion rate, not so, 10%. Like if you go from 25% conversion rate to 15% conversion rate, that would be terrible. But also going from 25 to 20 is, you know, I think.
Well, I mean, just to make it round. So let's say that 30%. Is your conversion rate, and 5% of 30 is 1.5, right?
Yep.
So 30% drops to 28.5. That's a cause for concern, right?
It's a warning to tell me to go take a look.
Yes. Okay. So that's what I mean by 5% of the conversion rate, not
exactly.
5%, not 30 going down to 25.
Yeah.
No, it's 30 going down to 5% of 30 is 1.5, go down to, 28.5. That's a cause for concern. And what do you do if there is such a drop? What are you looking at?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Check out the PDP first and foremost. You know, go take a look into Seller Central, take a look at your inventory. It could be reviews. It could be, you know, maybe somebody put up a review on your product that's very not favorable, and you have an issue with your product, and you know it could be you dropping out of a certain review percentage where you can advertise because it's no longer retail, you know, considered retail ready. So checking the front end, checking the back end of Seller Central, pulling out reports, and just trying to find some of the outliers. And again, depending on what data visualization software you use, stuff like Tableau, they have like widgets where, you know, they call it, I believe it's Einstein, where they'll be able to extrapolate anomalies within your data automatically for you, so that you maybe don't have to spend so much time kind of like trying to drill into, okay, what caused this outlier on this product, or this, you know, all my products seem to be doing really well, but this one, suddenly the conversion rate tanked. Like what's the metric behind the scenes that caused that decrease, to help
By
you
the
get
way,
again to the action faster?
How about traffic? Do you find that increase in traffic is a cause for decrease in conversion?
It can be, absolutely. I would say that depending on the reason for the traffic increase, I would probably expect my conversion rate to initially kind of come down a little bit. If you have a big spike in traffic that's completely out of the norm. But again, there's a lot of reasons why traffic can spike. It can be suddenly you got a bestseller badge. You became the bestseller maybe in one of the subcategories that you've been targeting. You're not like the number one jacket in men's jackets. That would be the golden place to be, right? But maybe in men's high performance rain jackets, suddenly you're now the bestseller for one of those like really tertiary subcategories. And that could cause things to change in your organic rank on a larger category. So again, I think it takes you a minute to diagnose exactly why the traffic spiked. Unless you're literally just pouring media dollars on, then it's pretty easy to say, oh, okay, well, we just turned on PPC, so we can expect a pretty quick traffic increase at cause and effect. And yeah, but once you've diagnosed, I would say initially you probably expect to see a little bit of a dip in conversion rate, but hopefully you get good at understanding where and who that customer is and where they're coming from so that you can prime them with content and the right signals to help keep that
Right.
conversion rate high once they get there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this is something also it links directly to the Amazon algorithm that will give you more and more exposure in search results since a conversion rate drives a lot of things. So, Amazon's expectation is to maintain a stable conversion rate no matter what the traffic is. And your point about why the increase is exactly the reason. You don't want to be driving irrelevant traffic to your product listing at
For
all
sure.
because that's going to cause your conversion to drop and Amazon is not going to like that. And then your exposure in search results will also suffer as a result of it. So Amazon, they are ruthless in their expectations for sellers. They don't want your conversion rate to drop just because you've gotten extra traffic. Yeah, it doesn't, it's not fact. So, yeah, so because ultimately, what do you want? You want your organic rank to increase so that you have more and more exposure, and that more organic rank increase will come from the listing performing really well. So, if the listing is going to perform well, it's going to convert well. So by sending more and more traffic that's not converting, it's not going to help you, right? So.
And I'll admit, like it can be really tough, and sometimes you got to think out of the box. Like if there's a, you're watching a live sports game and they like hone in on somebody and it's clear what the product is. It wasn't planned product placement. But use other tools that are out there, stuff like Google Trends. Sometimes you can start searching for a specific product and see, like, okay, I know what's happening on Amazon and on my PDP, but I think you'd be selling yourself short if you treated like anything that ever happens to my product only ever happens and only is ever spoken about or searched on Amazon. People are searching for things all over the place, and definitely use those tools that are available to you to help you understand when you're really not sure, like, okay, where did this traffic spike come from? It can help you kind of like maybe
Yeah.
figure out the exact day or the exact time, then you can start trying to ask yourself, okay, well, what happened during that time where maybe this got picked up?
Yeah. Well, Cameron, this is usually where we move on to the getting to know you part, but we're not going to do that with you because we're going to bring you back. So,
Right, sounds
because
good.
I'd love to, if it's okay with you, I'm putting you on the spot. You up for part two, Cameron Hartwood
Yeah,
part two?
let's go for it.
All
I
right,
know I
cool.
maybe wasn't ex as direct as hoped on certain things, and always happy to continue to dig in and kind of
Yeah,
unlock
yes.
my past
So
experience.
we'll do that. So for everybody listening, stay tuned for Cameron Harper part two. We're gonna pick more data points and we're gonna dissect them into what they mean and what we do for it. And then when we do that, then we'll get to know Cameron more because I want to know, frankly, what kind of a person he is to become the person he's become with all the numbers. You know, where is that coming from? And that's going to be on the next episode. So with that, I'll say, but before we go, share your contact information. So in the meantime, if anybody wants to reach out, how can they find the company and also you?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're looking for Padean specific stuff, I would definitely say just contact at Padean. is the easiest way to get a hold of us. We're super responsive. And then if you're looking to get a hold of me directly, I'd probably just push you to my LinkedIn. Pretty straightforward. It's an easy way to also see some of my background to help understand kind of like where and how my brain got to where it is today. Because it's, I will say, it's not very linear. It's kind of danced all over the place, but always in e-commerce. So reach out via LinkedIn or contact at padean.com is a great way to get a hold of us. Maybe if you're, you know, interested in looking for an agency or something like that as well.
Great, great. Thank you. And I will see you again soon. Before I go, a quick reminder to say goodbye to your cash flow problems and claim your extra $1,500 when you qualify for $25,000 or more in funding. Go to www.runviably.com/legends and start your application today. Also, don't forget to get your winning product detail page from mindfulgoods.co and get up to 600% boost in your sales. You will get $100 off the service. Visit www.mindfulgoods.co/legends and enter the code Amazon Legends to enjoy your $100 off. And with that, this brings us to the end of another episode, and I'll see you on the next one.
If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the episode, and share it with someone you think would benefit from it too.